You're listening to the Ask Drone You podcast. You ask, we answer your drone questions. Whether you're here to turn your passion into profit or you simply fly for fun, we're a community of learners and teachers who aspire to achieve greatness. We are
Drone You.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another news edition of the Ask Drone You podcast. Joining me today, as always, is the Flying Dutchman. My friend, how are you doing?
Very good, Paul. How are you doing today?
I could say very good, but I would be lying to you, Haya. But you know what? I think a lot of people have mixed emotions in what's going on in the wake of the virus. There is so much going on. But you know what? That also makes me grateful, makes me excited for what is going on in the drone industry. There are some good things. There are a lot of good things. And there are some bad things, but there are a lot of good things, which brings us to our first piece of drone news, which it looks like in New York City, M210s are being used to check body temperatures in the wake of the coronavirus. As I had actually posted this video on Instagram, and I called it Perch and Deploy, because it looks like, well, the drones aren't even flying, but rather providing useful information to public safety. Haya, what do you have here?
Yeah, this is happening in the makeshift hospital in the Javits Convention Center. I believe they have about 3,000 beds set up there in a temporarily hospital setting. And what happens is when people come in, and this is in particular for staff people, they're being checked for any symptoms. And one of the telltales, of course, is having a fever. So they scan all the staff walking into the building to see if they have signs of fever. And typically they would do that with handheld devices. But since a lot of those are on back order and apparently they don't have enough, they decide that they might as well use a DJI Matrice 210 with the Zenmuse X-T2 dual thermal camera. And of course, typically that drone will be in the air using those cameras. But of course, if you set it on a desk, you can also use it while not being airborne. So it's fun to see how people get creative in times like these when there's a crisis, and they basically use the tools that they have on hand. And if it's a drone with a thermal camera, then hey, why not use that instead if you have to?
Yeah, what a great idea. I definitely wonder what type of calibrations and whatnot must be required to be able to get that level of accuracy on the thermal camera. But it's really cool to see, Haya, really cool to see as drones continue to save lives and continue to be used for good. Which brings us to our next story. As drones are being used for good, it looks like one 12-year-old boy has a lot to be grateful for, and that is flying robots. Haya, what's going on here?
Yeah, this is a 12-year-old who was reported missing after 8 p.m. On Saturday, April 4th. And of course, this time of year, especially in England, it's still quite chilly at night. So for 12-year-olds to not be home where he's supposed to be and basically being lost in the dark is not a good thing. They had people out there searching for him, and I believe they even had a canine unit as well, and they weren't able to find the boy. Then they used a drone with a thermal camera. It's almost becoming an old story at this point, but drones with thermal cameras can scan so much more territory or greater areas so much faster than you can on foot. And of course, they are able to find that boy within an hour of putting the drone in the sky. So it's another example of drones being used for good. I mean, you see a lot more drones now with thermal cameras being deployed during these search and rescue missions, and very successfully so, if I can point out. And yeah, of course, these are the kind of stories that we want to promote, because we want more search and rescue operators and first responders to get their hands on these drones. And really, I mean, you don't necessarily need a Matrice. You can get away in many times with a DJI Mavic 2 Enterprise Duo, which is a lot more affordable. And if you can save somebody's life, like in this case, and I think that's money well spent.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Haya. Could not agree more. And honestly, that maybe before we get into our next piece of good drone news, maybe we should talk about the one way that drones are being used that are causing quite a controversy. And you and I, well, we had a chance to talk about this in our last news show, as drones were being used to yell at pedestrians to social distance, which has many residents and civilians fearing that dystopian society is already upon us, as drones are trying to tell us what to do. So, Haya, before we spruce everyone back up into positivity, I'm wondering, you know, now that there's another story out there on how drones are being used to enforce social distancing, has your opinion changed at all? Or, before we go into the story, what do you think about this? Have you seen the buzz that it's caused in the groups? Because it's astounding that I've seen, at least.
You mean in terms of drones being used to communicate to people on the ground and tell them to wear masks and stay inside and not gather in larger groups? It's effective. And I think in times like these, when there's a crisis, I think you're probably justified to use tools like drones for these purposes if it's for a greater good. I don't hope that going forward, when this crisis is behind us, that drones will be used in this way as well. I think flying drones, monitoring and observing people and correcting them, yeah, that is a bit of a scary thought. But if it's a time of a crisis and you really need people to listen and pay attention, and if this is an effective way of doing it, then and under those circumstances, I would be in favor of using drones like this.
Interesting. Well, there have been a lot of comments online that I've seen where a lot of Western cultures are saying that, you know, when they see drones with speakers telling people what to do, they instantly get this picture of a dystopian society, 1984, you know, all over again. And I wrote on Instagram, you know, when we talked about this before, I said, you know, I don't really know where I feel. I don't really know where I sit on this. And I feel like my position is evolving because I feel like this gives our industry such a negative perception that you may have fewer people implementing the use of drones because more and more people have a negative connotation of them. And now that's affecting our abilities to fly safely, not being accosted. Mm-hmm. So I think that there are a lot of long-term effects that maybe some people are not considering. But let's get into this story because, Haya, it seems like just from the title of this particular story that now the FAA is investigating these people who were using drones to enforce social distancing. So what are they investigating?
Well, this is a kind of an interesting story for sure. I mean, the guy goes by the name Drone X Factor on YouTube. So if you look him up, you can actually see the video. Apparently, he was driving on the FDR, the highway on the east side of Manhattan. And as he's driving, he comes past a park, apparently, where he sees all these people enjoying the outdoors. It was a beautiful day. They're outside. They're hanging out in smaller groups, but there's a fairly large number of them. So this guy felt compelled to basically get off the highway, park the car, launch his DJI Mavic 2 Enterprise drone with a loudspeaker mounted on top. He had a pre-recorded message, and the message was good in a way that you can tell that he put thought in it. So this was, I don't believe this was an off-the-cuff moment, like a spontaneous thing. I think it was very well planned out, and he knew what he was going to do, because I think this was probably pre-recorded. He parked the car in an area in Manhattan that just falls out of classified airspace, so he could fly in that area. However, if you remember correctly, there's an outdated law in Manhattan that prevents anybody from landing and launching or landing and taking off with aircraft in Manhattan. So even though the airspace might have been clear where he was flying, he still was not allowed to take off with the drone at the spot where he did. And also, when you then fly over the East River is classified airspace again, and you're not allowed to fly drones there. So there's a lot of things going on to get from where he was parked to where he was actually flying the drone. He had to cross a highway. He was crossing that same field where all those people were hanging out. So there's a lot of things that you can question and wonder whether this was a smart thing to do. On top of that, of course, once that drone is out there and it starts playing this message, broadcasting that message to people, and he was saying something like, this is the anti-COVID-19 volunteer drone task force. But it sounds kind of official. And I think when all of a sudden the drone comes out and starts blasting those kind of messages to people, people pay attention and do wonder whether this is something from the NYPD, the police department in New York, or whether this is something else. So it came across to me as a premeditated action. He had planned it out. He knew what he was going to do. He knew where he was going to fly, and he was trying to get in between all the different legal restrictions that apply there. I think it was a very poor choice. I don't think he should have been doing this because it's almost like he's impersonating the police when he has a drone with a loudspeaker, because all the other drones with loudspeakers we know of basically are being used by fire departments, police departments, and other first responders. So he's pretending to be one of them. It seemed that he was flying from inside his vehicle. So he parked his car, got back into the car, was flying apparently from inside the car. We don't know if that's true for the entire duration of the flight, but if that's what he did do, then you can wonder how well he would be able to actually view the drone as it was flying over that highway and across that field. So you would need to get the flight information from DJI, which I'm sure the FAA would have no problem getting, to know exactly where he was flying. And you would have to question him or interview him, I guess, for the other details. But I think it was a poor decision on his part, for sure. And I think what it does as well is that it puts other drone pilots in a bad daylight, basically. It doesn't help our industry. It doesn't help us as drone pilots, whether you're a hobbyist drone pilot or professional, it doesn't really matter. So yeah, it's a bad story. We know that the NYPD got involved because they were approached by news outlets asking if it was a police drone. They said it wasn't one of theirs. And we know that the FAA is now investigating this as well. So we'll probably hear more of it soon. I don't know if the FAA is going to let him off easily with just a warning, or whether they're going to actually make an example out of him and nail him on probably a number of different things that he did do wrong.
Yeah, that, you know, you bring up a really good point, whether they, what the enforcement action will be. And we know that, you know, the FAA is, you know, focused on compliance strategies, which I think really do offer people second chances when they didn't know that they were screwing up, which I think is a good thing. That being said, you bring up a really good point. You know, he breaches controlled airspace multiple times. I think, you know, if the NYPD are getting involved now, the fact that he took off and landed from their land, and we know states can control takeoff and landing, they just can't control the airspace. Yeah. So, that being said, it seems like if I were a FAA or an aviation investigator, that this would be kind of a slam dunk case, because just like you said, Haya, it's very easy to showcase intention. If he intentionally pre-recorded the recording, he knew where he was going to go. He parked in a certain area to be outside of controlled airspace, but still breached controlled airspace. And then, you know, you really wonder, does this operation fall under Part 107 or not? And I would say, you know, if he's sitting there branding his task force, that even though it's kind of sounds like it's public safety, to me, I think that's very easily provable that this is a commercial operation, because he's branding a group. And if it's not a registered 501c3, you know, and even then, it's still a commercial operation.
He has a YouTube channel with quite a number of videos. So he's trying to grow his channel, which you could see is an economic activity. Apparently, he's also a Part 107 licensed drone pilot, because people on Facebook within the drone community were very fast to kind of track this guy down. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. Also, there was, as far as you could tell, based on the video, no FAA registration number displayed on the outside of the drone. So I think if the FAA wants to, and they can probably sink their teeth into this one and make an example out of it. I hope for him that they won't, but maybe it's time for something like that. I don't know. I was surprised with how sloppy the video was, in a way that if he wanted to kind of conceal information, he didn't really do a good job. I mean, when he takes off with his drone, the coordinates of that takeoff spot are in full display. When he's flying over the East River, the coordinates are visible in the video as well. So there's so much evidence and facts in the video that the FAA can use to do their research. It's kind of scary for him almost.
Well, you know what? He did put himself in quite a precarious situation. So he has whatever is coming to him is coming to him. And, you know, I'm not really sure that it's a bad thing for the drone industry. Obviously, it's going to suck for him. But if he's just trying to get attention and whatnot, again, deserves the wrath of the FAA. And frankly, I think, you know, right before the virus, we had heard about another uptick in enforcements, but no proof, just empirical evidence. But that being said, like you mentioned, you know, you wonder if they're going to go right past compliance philosophy, since he has so many examples of egregiously breaking the rules. So I think, you know, he really shot himself in the foot multiple ways. But also, I'm glad the FAA is also coming after this, because this is a black eye for the industry. He is doing nothing good for the industry as a whole, in my opinion. But moving on, let's get back to the good news, Haya, because it looks like some people are going to continue living thanks to drone delivery, as people in the wake of the virus still need their medications to survive. And looks like one happy family received some, well, life-saving drugs via drone delivery. Haya, what's going on in Ireland?
Yeah, this took place last year, where they had a drone, same drone, by the way, that is used in the testing here in the US with UPS from Wingcopter. It's a fixed wing drone. They used one in Western Ireland to get insulin medication from the mainland, from Galway, Ireland, to the Iron Islands, which are about 12 miles off the shore. So it's a pretty decent distance. It was about a 16-minute drone flight to get there beyond line of sight. This happened on September 13th of last year. And it worked great. I mean, there were a lot of technical and legal things they had to live up to. I mean, for instance, medication can only be administered by a physician or somebody from a pharmacy. So they had to bring somebody in to officially do that and put the package into the drone so they would legally follow the rules. The drone flew out and also brought back a blood sample on the return flight so that they can actually monitor the blood levels and see if the medication dose is correct for this person. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's not just in Ireland, but there are so many locations around the world where you have people living in remote areas or areas that are hard to reach in certain weather conditions. If there's been a lot of rainfall, like we know that Zipline helps with in Rwanda, where they can use fixed-wing drones as well to get to remotely located people. There are so many opportunities around the world where you can get medical supplies or medication or vaccines to people much, much faster, much safer, and much more affordable with a drone than you can do in any other way. And also, of course, the benefit of a drone is that you have a contactless delivery. Like, there's no human being involved in actually handing over the package from one person to the next, which in these times with the coronavirus is an added benefit. It makes a lot of sense. And I think most people within the drone industry have already recognized this. So for us, it's nothing new, but it's good to see that these tests are actually taking place. This was a story in Ireland. We know that Zipline is currently talking with the FAA to speed up their delivery approvals here in the US to start using their fixed wing drones here in the United States to make deliveries as well. And they've already been active in North Carolina as part of the IPP program. However, now they're talking with the FAA to see if they can ramp up that process and basically fast track and get their drones to start making deliveries here in the United States as well, which I hope they are able to pull that off. I think there's a lot of benefits for all of us. And especially in these times, we need this new technology that's available to us. We need to be able to implement it and start using it. And I think the FAA is not known for acting very quick when it comes to approving new technologies. Hopefully they can make an exception here and speed things up.
Yeah, it would be nice if they could speed things up. You know, I wonder, Haya, if we had been using drone delivery a lot like how Wuhan was using drone delivery to deliver groceries, deliver medications, right? They had a true lockdown, a true quarantine to stop the virus. And then meanwhile, we still have maybe 30% of our population continuing to run around. And it makes me wonder if America had access to drone delivery, even if it was just by deploying the 100,000 drone pilots that we have today and creating an army to create this infrastructure of drone delivery, I think you could directly link that to saving lives. I mean, really, and you have a much more effective quarantine, and it could be a lot shorter period of time, and it could probably bring our economy back a lot faster. But it might be too late at this time, Haya, but would you see drone delivery having a large effect on the fight against the coronavirus?
Oh, there's definitely, there are multiple ways in which drones can help. I mean, going back to the Zipline example, think about administering tests. If there was like a smaller test that you could actually give to people at home that they can use themselves and then send it back into a lab, you might be able to deliver those tests by drone. You can, as we know that DJI was involved with in China, you can disinfect large public areas by using those big agricultural drones and then spray those areas. I think, was it Brendan Schulman who said that it's about 50 times faster to do it by drone if you're disinfecting a large public space and if you do it by traditional methods. On top of that, you're not exposing anybody to those kind of chemicals. So there are a lot of ways in which drones can help in times like these. And I hope that maybe a silver lining in this whole corona crisis is that people are discovering how you can use drones, that we can use drones, that they're beneficial to the society. And hopefully that will help us to accept the use of drones in these ways faster and also put a fire under the FAA and to get them to come off their you know what and get the regulation in place so we can deploy drones on a much larger scale in this country.
Yeah, I think it would. I agree, Haya. Not much else to say. but look, I know you are really excited. DJI just launched something quietly, secretly, and the Flying Dutchman, he has taken his investigative skills to a whole new level, showcasing that there may be more than one drone that we should expect. Haya, stop teasing us. What you got? What's going on here?
All right, let's dive right in. About, what was it, like 2 weeks ago, the first photos were leaked of a new DJI drone. Pretty much the same shape and same form factor, same color as we know from the DJI Mavic 2 Pro and Zoom. However, this one is a lot more smaller. And there was a lot of speculation initially whether this was going to be the DJI Mavic Air 2, like the successor to the original Air, or whether this might come under a new name, just plain and simply DJI Mavic. It seems now that the official name will be the DJI Mavic Air 2, because today filings from the FCC surfaced that confirmed both the DJI Mavic Air 2 as a new drone to be released from DJI, as well as a new remote controller. So we know it's coming. After digging through the FCC filings to see if there's any more information in there, one interesting thing did pop up, and that's the fact that there are two different models mentioned. There is the MA2, which is Mavic Air 2 UE1N, and then there is also the MA2 UE3W. Now, we're not quite sure. I mean, we have seen in the past different models from one drone. I mean, the obvious one, of course, is the DJI Mavic 2 Pro and Zoom, which technically is the same drone except for the gimbal camera setup. For the DJI Mavic Mini, however, there are also two different versions. One is the one that we know that weighs less than 250 grams. That is the one that you can buy basically in the United States, Canada, Europe, pretty much all over the world. But then there's a second version specifically for the Japanese market where that weight limit is not 250 grams, but 200 grams. So DJI made a separate version just for the Japanese market that doesn't have two batteries, but just one battery. And therefore, the weight drops even more to below 200 grams. So there are situations where we have two models for the same drone. Now, with the DJI Mavic 2 Air, we're not quite sure why there are two different models out there. I mean, one, of course, is going to be the regular one for consumers. The second version, is that going to be a DJI Mavic 2 Air Enterprise Edition? Maybe, could be. Maybe there's one specifically for first responders and search and rescue missions. I mean, we don't have enough information at this point to know for sure, but if you think about it, it might make sense because this drone is going to be small, it's going to be lightweight. It seems it's going to have at least OcuSync 2.0, but maybe even an improved version. You can see on the remote controller, there's a heatsink on the back, which might indicate that there's more upgraded hardware installed on the inside. That will be a first. So if it has a better connection and a longer range or a larger range, it might be a drone that's really well suited for search and rescue. Now, on top of that, this drone is going to be heavier than 250 grams, which means it's going to be the first DJI drone to be launched this year that's going to have ADS-B in, meaning that if other manned aircraft, let's say the aircraft that fight a forest fire or helicopters that are involved in that same search and rescue mission, if they are flying around, you'll be able to tell on the display from your, not from your controller, but from your smartphone, where those manned aircraft are. So again, for search and rescue, you might be able to fly a drone in the same airspace as those helicopters or airplanes that are operating if it's all part of the same bigger operation and do it in a safe way. So if that's true, and we don't know at this point because we don't have enough information, but you could see how you could make a case for a special version of this drone dedicated to that market. Another feature that we know is going to be part of the Matrice 300 is that you'll be able to pass the control on from one person to the next. So let's say Paul and I are in a rescue mission. I may be able to, let's say, be at the base command center where Paul is out in the fields. I'm flying the drone and then hand over the controls to Paul because he's better situated to have a much better visual line of sight to where the drone is actually going to fly to. So there are a number of use cases that you can come up with for search and rescue specifically, why it might make sense that there would be a second version of this drone. As of now, we only know that there are two versions, and unfortunately, we don't know yet what the other version is for. So fingers crossed. And once we find out more, we'll be sure to let you know, of course.
Wow, that was a lot, man. Holy cow. Where do I even start? First of all, that you know, beyond visual line of sight application that you mentioned for search and rescue, one of the DroneU members, Bill English, was one of the first to get a BVLOS waiver. I call it the EVLOS waiver because it literally is daisy-chaining visual observers, just how you had kind of mentioned and alluded to. But it makes me wonder, you and I had kind of seen that two models were coming about. If they added a dual sensor to this vehicle, wow, it could really be powerful.
Yeah.
I would just ask, you know, if DJI did give us two models and one of them was an enterprise edition, get rid of that pilot app because it doesn't show us voltage. There's so many negatives about using that drone and fundamentally makes public safety operations less safe because of how the app works in differentiation from DJI Go 4. That being said, I hope that there are two models. I hope, though, that they don't lock down the second model to not be able to have some crucial features that the consumer models have. That being said, Haya, I know this is really exciting. In the wake of the virus, do you think that they're going to have a lot of sales outside of Asia?
I think so. I mean, I think if you look at the drone market, you have to look at it in different ways, I think. I mean, one group of people that buy drones, of course, are the hobbyist drone pilots around the world who would buy a DJI Mavic Mini or a Zoom or an Air or what have you. Professional drone pilots too, but I think, and those markets are probably hurting right now because I can imagine that when people are not allowed to travel, they can't really go any place, then the appeal of a drone might be less to them at this point because they're not going to go anywhere. They can't take that Mavic Mini with them on their trip. So why buy one, right? I mean, I think that makes sense. But at the same time, if you look at a different market, more the market of fire departments, police departments, first responders, search and rescue, all those kind of groups, I can imagine that with the coronavirus outbreak, that those markets are actually growing and more people are seeing the use case for drones and are ready to probably buy one. And I think some proof of this can be found in DJI's marketing strategy. They just came up with a disaster relief program in which, for the US market at least, they've made available 100, and I think they're are mostly all, maybe all DJI Mavic 2 Enterprise drones, some of them with dual sensors, some of them not. And they've been getting those drones in the hands of all these different police departments. So you can see that DJI is proactively pursuing these customers, basically, or these areas of the market. Of course, because they want to help them, but also they want to further their business case and show what these drones are capable of. Now, if you look at the DJI Mavic 2 Enterprise, I mean, it's based on the DJI Mavic 2 Zoom, which was launched in the summer of 2018. You could argue that by now that's almost all technology, and they've probably learned a lot from dealing with all these first responders and police departments as to how they use these drones, what the weaknesses are, what the strengths are. So going back to the DJI Mavic 2 Air, it'd be really, really cool if they've taken some of those learnings, implemented that into a smaller, maybe even more capable drone, and hopefully that will be that second version that we now know of because of the FCC filing. One last thing about the FCC filing, I believe it was July 8th, that the secrecy expires on those filings. If that's the case, then most likely we'll see these drones come to market in the US either late in May or sometime early June is what I would expect.
Awesome. Well, thank you, DJI, for the birthday present, because that's my birthday, Hi.
there you go.
But all right, let's go into the next piece, which is kind of connected to this, because with everything that you have just said, that you've just alluded to, well, what does that leave for the next article, which is all about huge surprises to global consumers soon from DJI? I mean, how does this all tie together?
Well, that's the other thing, is that there have been a number of rumors and some news articles about DJI, about the company firing people, laying people off, closing parts of their offices here in the United States. We've heard that salespeople supposedly were fired, that people working at repair centers might have lost their jobs. Currently, I'm working on getting on all the exact details. DJI, of course, said that, yeah, there have been some changes, but we're not going to tell anything about it because we're a private company, so we don't have to. However, in an article that was in the South China Post earlier today, there was another spokesperson from DJI in Asia by the name of Kshai Chandi, which I probably totally butchered, but my apologies for that. He said that DJI is currently busy with new projects and will bring huge surprises to global consumers soon. We don't have time to deal with absurd and false information or speculation, referring to the layoffs and all that stuff. But the thing, of course, that stood out here is that they will bring huge surprises to global consumers soon. A huge surprise. If it's huge, you could think, okay, bigger perhaps. DJI Mavic 2 Air or Air 2 would not be big. It's probably a smaller drone, actually. But if that is being introduced in the midst of this crisis sometime May or June, yeah, that would be a big surprise for sure. And I think that's what he might be referring to here. At least I hope so.
If I were to guess, which I'm going to, if I were to guess, I would imagine this has something to do with DJI utilizing the 1DC and 2DC sensors to come out with a consumer version of a handheld camera, of a mirrorless camera. And then, so I could see them doing that and then using that camera that they develop to be a super high megapixel camera on a decent sized sensor like the 1DC. Or maybe they, you know, go higher. Maybe they make something bigger. They launch a handheld camera, and then that pays for the ability to now take that camera and put it on a gimbal and put it on the Inspire 3 or the M300. And then it also takes that ability to now come out with a prosumer grade, you know, new Osmo. We haven't seen one of those forever. And yet you see NBC Nightly News using the thing all the time. Like, you know, they are and continue to be very useful tools. But like you said, the resolution and the quality is outdated. So if DJI is saying, hold my beer, watch what we're about to do, I would imagine it's a lot more than a drone. It's something that we shouldn't be expecting. So, you know, DJI is actually quite good at surprises, if we're going to be honest. And that being said, that makes me question our source when it comes to these leaks, if you know what I'm saying. Because it seems like some of these leaks might be a little bit more pre-planned.
I think so. I mean, yeah, that person is pretty closely related to DJI. In this quote, he's saying, we'll bring huge surprises, plural. So already there could be multiple product releases from DJI. We know that, I mean, we've seen the FCC filing for the DJI Mavic Air 2, so we know that's coming. We know the Matrice 300 is coming. So those two products we know for sure. DJI already ventured into different product categories. They're not just a drone company. Years ago, they got a majority stake in Hasselblad. We know, of course, of the gimbals, the Osmos, all that stuff. So for them to diversify and have a larger offering than just drones makes a ton of sense. Honestly, I had expected that we would have seen new product releases from DJI already earlier this year if it hadn't been for the coronavirus outbreak. So yeah, I think there's probably multiple things on the way. Hopefully, a lot of that will come before this summer, and that'd be really, really exciting. And yeah, I know you want to say something, so chip in here. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's a lot of points I want to make. But if you think about it, if we follow the money, right, and with remote ID really threatening to pretty much shut down the entire industry as written or as proposed, you know, follow the money. What is DJI going to do to keep bringing in revenue, right? They're gonna launch something that it doesn't face as many regulations, but is also in their wheelhouse, right? It's something that they're good at. So this is my prediction, is that, you know, going back to, I think they come out with a mirrorless handheld camera that kind of undermines Hasselblad's, you know, expensive series. But imagine if you could pair that camera on a drone. Imagine if you could pair that camera on a Ronin S or a new Ronin. Yeah, or imagine that, you know, what did DJI just release? That Robo thing, what RoboMaster or whatever it is, right? And that's on the ground. What do we know about ground-based or UGVs? No regulations, right? So they can build the camera, sell it at mass, and then, you know, offer an enterprise suite around that camera on the ground, right? They've already had people exploring from the air, and if the air is going to be shut off, people are still going to want to explore. DJI knows that. How can they service those needs?
I think a very good point that you make is the fact to be able to use a camera like that on different devices. I mean, if it was just going to be a mirrorless camera, then I think DJI would have some serious competition from, let's say, Canon, Nikon, Sony, Fuji. So, but if you have something that you can use on drones, gimbals, and other equipment, now you're back in DJI's niche, because I think nobody really does it better at this point than DJI, and they're able to get that quality at a price point that is unmatchable for the competition. So if you start combining those things, yeah, I think DJI would have a very strong case there.
Yeah. Wow. My my brain is flooding with ideas, because it's actually quite brilliant plan if you think about it, especially if the United States continues to go down the anti-China route. So it should be very interesting to see what happens. The one thing I will say is I disagree with you that they would have competition from people alikes of Nikon and Canon. Canon's mirrorless offerings are really subpar to what Fuji, your camera, I don't know what model it is, your camera is a perfect example. Really, I think the only competitors to DJI, if they had a mirrorless Hasselblad-based sensor camera, the only competitors would be Sony and Fujifilm with the camera that you have. Think about this, right? How do they crush the competition? They offer the ecosystem. They offer the gimbal. They offer the gimbal that connects to the car, that connects to the drone, right? You offer more ways to utilize the same technology, right? So,
yeah. But you would also need all the different lenses that come with that, right? So, I mean, if you're getting into cameras, then it's not just a sensor. You need the color science. You need the, I mean, arguably they will be able to get that from Hasselblad, but you also need a whole range of different lenses that you can use. I think that the gimbal and the unmanned aircraft, the drones, is really where DJI makes a huge difference, and they have a very, very strong competitive advantage. If they can team up a digital mirrorless camera with those other platforms, then yeah, I think they have a really, really strong offering.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just think that that if the airspace again gets shut down as proposed, then this is their segue. This is their pivot as a company.
Yeah.
So, but
that's smart, right?
It is smart. It really is, actually. And I wouldn't expect anything less of someone like DJI. It also makes sense because they're taking their time to release these new products. So they want to perfect it, because they are like the Apple of aircraft, right? So they are expected to have a high degree of quality at this point. So if they launch something like a camera, it will be scrutinized widely. So I think that they are really trying to be careful. But again, they can offer consumers, and I think this is what Sony did when they first launched the NEX 3, the NEX 5, that turned into the Alpha 5100, the 6000, the 6300. It was the color science. The family could go out and take a photo, who doesn't know how to edit, and take a pretty half-decent photo with it, right? Still not anywhere up to par with what a professional would do, because they know how to use the camera, but it's still, they made it easy and convenient, right? Go back to the grocery store, right? Why do we have frozen veggies? Because you want to get in and out of the grocery store fast, and you want your stuff to last. It's that simple. So, you know, I really think that DJI is really cooking up something good here. And it's exciting. I know you have another point, so I won't move on, but I have one more story. So
okay, then I'll just quickly chip in here. I think this is also where the disaster relief program from DJI makes a lot of sense, because with all the political headwinds that the company is facing, and the fact that DJI might be excluded perhaps from selling drones in the United States, if they can make the case or multiple cases of where their products, their drones are being used for the greater benefit of society and are able to help in times of crisis and disaster, you're going to get a lot of pushback from people in the field who've been using these drones if the government would say, oh, you know what, DJI can't sell their drones in the United States anymore. Because at that point, there would be so many examples and so many stories out there where these drones have helped to either mitigate disasters, save lives. And I think a lot of people will be up in arms to say, well, hey, you can't take these tools away from us because you don't have any alternative. There is right now, unfortunately, I mean, I wish there were, if there is no other product available that can perform these tasks and that people can get at these low prices, then you can't take it away from us.
And there really is no American manufacturer. I know one just kind of popped up offering a new contract, and I'm really excited to talk about this here soon. But that being said, there really is no, like you said, affordable American solution. And, you know, John Rupert mentioned this, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So I think it's a smart marketing strategy when you focus on what's good for the greater society, right? You're like, how can you argue with this? We're saving lives.
Yeah.
Hopefully the government will listen, because I understand the tensions between the countries and there are justifiable reasons for that. But drone data security is not one of them. So, yeah.
No, and drones have proven their point already. Like, these are useful tools. I think, what was it, Adam Lisberg just tweeted out the other day that I think 372 lives, as far as they are able to count, have been saved now with the help of drones. And that's just with very little drones in the hands of people that actually save lives. If you get those drones in the hands of all the people that work in search and rescue and fire departments and police departments, that number would skyrocket. So I can see that they get rid of drones anymore at this point. And I for sure hope that they don't exclude DJI from selling their products here in the US.
Yeah, me too. But let's get back to one more piece of good news this week, which is actually something that I wrote about, Haya, and I'm really excited to kind of dive into this. But drone pilots have one awesome, unique opportunity, not just any drone pilots, but rather drone mappers. In the wake of the coronavirus, it's hard for some to continue earning revenue as drone companies. In fact, we're seeing mass consolidation across the industry as a whole right now, which has many fearful. But while some are getting fearful and getting focused on what to worry about, others are taking action and they are taking advantage of two unique opportunities. And I only wrote about one of them. But these two unique opportunities, one in insurance and roof inspections, and number two is now mapping homes for virtual reality. Haya, there's a problem. Real estate agents cannot get boots on the ground. They cannot show homes. And even if a buyer did want to go into a home, there are few sellers who are willing to let the buyer in the house. This presents a problem for realtors because now they can't show homes. If they can't show homes, how are they going to sell them? This has many realtors pushing to get all of their homes mapped. Most realtors now have been mapping homes previously, as we've seen apps like Zillow offer 3D models of homes to make it, you know, really easy for buyers to view them right in the app. Well, with that said, most realtors, though, are only mapping the inside of houses. And the world's largest interior mapping processor, Matterport, even showcases in their educational and resource material that if these mappers want to showcase the exterior, they can simply take one 360 photo to allow people to see the outside. Now, this leaves a giant gaping hole of opportunity for drone pilots if they are familiar with the tactics and protocols of drone mapping. Drone mappers can create lifelike 3D models of homes rather quickly, utilizing softwares like Pix4D and Drone Deploy. Because these two apps have made it fundamentally easier and more convenient to create these maps, drone mappers have a unique opportunity to offer a service to a warm audience. What do I mean by a warm audience, Haya? I'm talking about realtors because they've already worked with drones. They're familiar with drones. They know what to expect. But instead of the low-hanging fruit of a $200 or $300 interior Matterport job, drone pilots can offer a technical service at a higher cost. So a warm audience, but a technical service means you can charge more as drone pilots. And I'm actually going to be doing another webinar on this. I just had a members-only webinar to give them a head start on this opportunity. But we're going to have another free webinar just so that everyone can attend and learn about this. And then we're going to be teaching drone mappers how to use a particular hack to get a cheaper camera to offer these Matterport services without spending $4,000 on a Matterport camera. So, Haya, for me, this is really exciting. And I have been having a lot of fun doing this. I have personally have been asked to provide this service almost three times this week. So, I don't have the time, energy, or I don't think my things will go well at the home if I take on those jobs. So I won't be taking them on, but we have been hiring people out at a pretty steady pace to go and take care of these jobs.
Just for our audience, I guess, if you were to map both the inside and the exterior of, let's say, a typical single family home, 2,500 square feet, how long would it take you to map out the interior in 3D as well as the outside of a building to give like a complete image to a prospective buyer?
So I think to map the outside, let's say a 2,000 square foot home, so that's about the size of my house, but my house is very close to other houses. So you could not really do autonomous missions. It'd be like a lot of free flights, a lot of orbits. I would say I could probably take care of my house in about 45 minutes to an hour. Let's say we account for the time it takes to get out of the car and prepare and all that crap. We're probably there for 90 minutes. And I will say this productivity hack that we showcased to our members about using the 360 camera instead of the Matterport camera, I unknowingly discovered that it saves you almost four. It literally takes a quarter of the time to use a 360 camera instead of the Matterport camera. So I literally mapped the entire office while instructing on how to do it in about an hour and a half, and that's 3,000 square feet.
Wow.
So I would say, you know, frankly, if we're being realistic, for someone who's a little bit lower on the learning curve, let's say it would take them 2 to 3 hours to map the outside of the house and maybe 2 hours to map the inside of it. But the beauty of using Matterport is that the processing is, well, autonomous.
Yeah. So your equipment is less expensive because the camera that you use is not as expensive as the Matterport one. Have you seen exterior 3D models of homes being used in the real estate business?
Well, I personally did it 3 years ago. I sold I sold a model to a realtor in Santa Fe who used the model. It's that Randy Travis one, the one I use as the example in the article. And I know that it was done in luxury real estate for at least the last few years. But I also know, Haya, that the demand has really gone down in mapping insides and outsides for real estate over the last year or two. And in the wake of the virus, the demand has literally gone skyrocketing high for these models now. So we're seeing, you know, a high demand. And the thing is that drone mappers really do have a unique advantage here, because most people who operate Matterport businesses, and there are people who this is all they do. In fact, one DroneU member, Isabella Wang out of Dallas-Fort Worth, she is one of the most talented Matterport users I have ever met in my life. And now she has the unique capability of creating exterior 3D models. So she can now sell at a higher price point, right? Because she's doing the exterior modeling. And because she knows how to do it, there's no learning curve. So she can go out and offer this service that other Matterport contractors simply won't know how to do. This is not a simple fire up your drone deploy app and get it to work. There's actually a little more acquisition knowledge that you would need in order to get this to work. And, you know, you can use Drone Deploy's cloud service for model construction. And in certain cases, it's actually pretty good.
So people that are interested, where do they go to find out more about this new technique and this new opportunity?
Well, they can go ahead and check out the link in the show notes below, or if it's in YouTube. And this will take them actually to your, well, I'm not sure where it will take them, but they can find out more through you. And if they're interested in actually taking a class, I think Hiya will be offering a unique deal through DroneXL, because Hiya, we want to support you as you transition into your new publishing company. And I will say, I know it's going to be successful, because when I first met you at DFW on the tarmac, when we were going to the DJI event in the bus, I will never forget. And I told you, I said, you know, you do such a good job because of the depth. There may not be a lot of writing, but there's a lot in the writing. And I think that you take that investigative journalism to a new level. And I think you're going to be just fine, Hiya.
Awesome. Appreciate you saying that, Paul. And I'm sure that working together with you guys will help as well. And yeah, I'd be happy to share your new information as well on this interior mapping. I think it's super excited. And I think we spoke about it before. I mean, a crisis, of course, is a bad thing. A lot of things change and some things might never return to the way they are. But there's always a silver lining. And I think for the drone industry, we've at least identified two of them in this new show that we did today. So awesome.
Couldn't agree more. And I will just say this as a final to-do. I think the coronavirus might actually be the best possible thing that's ever happened in the drone industry. It's delaying remote ID. It's delaying all these crappy bills that would literally murder the industry. And there's an increase in uptick in drone jobs because social distancing is so easy for pilots. So this could actually be the savior that we needed. So I need drone pilots to start thinking silver lining here. So, but Hiya, I am so grateful for you, my friend. Thank you again for joining me for another long-winded yet exciting news episode.
Yeah, my pleasure, Paul. I think this must have been one of the longest, lengthiest shows we've done, but I think it was a really, really good one. So as always, my pleasure being on the show, and I'm looking forward to the next one next week.
I am as well, Hiya. I hope you have a great weekend. Stay safe, keep the family safe, and keep taking to the skies. That's going to do it for us today. Thank you, everyone, for watching. Please go ahead, leave us a review, share the show on YouTube, share the show, leave a review. We need help in getting the word out to pilots, and we need help helping you. I know that sounds weird, but when we support each other and we come together, everyone wins, and that's what we need right now. Anyway, that's going to do it for our show today on another episode of Ask Drone U News Edition. My name is Paul. He's the Flying Dutchman. And you won't want to miss next week's show.
We believe that videos, images, words, and sounds have the absolute power to inform, inspire, and entertain. We reject indecision, confusion, and vanity, for they work against the community. We are united under the virtues of safety and knowledge. We are a training community of learners and teachers who encourage and energize each other to achieve greatness. We are pilots, videographers, photographers, freelancers, business owners, enthusiasts, experts, and apprentices. We are creators. We are the Drone U.